If you're talking about tech to solve climate change, you have to talk about geoengineering. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. In our climate tech series, How We Survive, we've been talking about tech that can help us adapt to climate change. Here's teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg speaking at the UN Climate Conference last month about calculations in the Paris Climate Accord for keeping the Earth's temperature from rising more than 1.5 degrees Celsius.
They also rely on my generation sucking hundreds of billions of tons of your CO2 out of the air with technologies that barely exist.
Those technologies are known as geoengineering, manipulating Earth's climate to try to fix a climate problem. Solomon Chang directs the Global Policy Laboratory at UC Berkeley, which has studied the potential consequences of geoengineering, but he also says there are some promising lines of research.
One that people talk about is just trying to suck CO2 back out of the atmosphere, maybe burying it as a liquid underground. There's other approaches, trying to keep things cool. So, you know, the Earth is heated up by the sun every day. And the greenhouse effect occurs because we put up CO2 into the atmosphere and it traps heat near the surface. One way to counteract that effect would be to put stuff up in the atmosphere to reflect some of the sun away from the planet before it ever gets into the atmosphere or hits the surface. And so that approach is called solar radiation management. And that's probably, you know, the thing that people discuss the most. There's a couple different ways people talk about achieving that. So, for example, we know from previous volcanoes that if you spray dust high up into the atmosphere, it reflects a lot of sunlight, and that can cool the surface. You know, that's happened in the past when big volcanoes erupted, Mount Pinatubo, for example. So we know that would work, and people have talked about whether we can do that intentionally. You know, maybe flying planes and releasing aerosols into the upper stratosphere. That's something that people are actually talking about and debating different strategies and various costs and benefits. So that's becoming quite real. There's other more sort of natural sounding approaches. Like, for example, there's an idea called cloud brightening, where you take, you know, maybe boats out in the ocean and you try to release particles into the atmosphere or spray mist, fine mist, basically making clouds brighter white so they reflect sunlight back out into space. So these are all different strategies people have talked about and are trying to think through what's practical and what's feasible, what might be cost effective, what might be dangerous.
Yeah, let's talk about the dangerous part, because it is really easy to go to imagining serious unintended consequences of manipulation at this level. Talk to me about what we want to avoid.
So there's sort of a growing body of research where people are trying to think about different unintended consequences. So, for example, one unintended consequence is that, you know, if you change how sunlight is coming in, it actually affects the weather patterns and it will change where rainfall falls. And so people have said, well, we might, you know, geoengineer in such a way that the planet stays cool on average. But then, you know, some people who have farms in the areas where the rain stops falling, they're going to be losers if we sort of implement this strategy. Mm-hmm. We did a research project where we tried to understand, you know, what is the economic value of all the sunlight that's coming in? So if we start reflecting sunlight back out to space, we're throwing away a valuable resource. We use that sunlight to grow the world's crops and feed humanity. And then there's stuff that's not an unintended consequence, but just it doesn't address all the problems of climate change. So, you know, putting CO2 in the atmosphere causes ocean acidification because you're changing the actual chemistry of the ocean. And if you, you know, if we spray dust up, we can keep the surface cool, but the ocean will still become acidic. And so there's some concern, you know, that no one knows what that will do to coral reefs, fisheries, and ecosystems. So there's a lot of concern that, you know, we might become reliant on geoengineering because it helps humans stay healthier, for example. But it's not really going to fix, it's not a holistic solution to the problem.
Right. Well, and as I hear you talk, I mean, you're clearly talking about solutions that would have a global impact and that would, I assume, require some global cooperation before they could be deployed, right? Which feels like another pretty big barrier.
Well, you would sort of like to imagine that we would agree on some sort of strategy before deploying it.
But I would like to imagine that.
But in reality, I don't know that that's necessary. And a lot of people worry that as the climate changes and you know, some locations realize that they are getting the short end of this bargain, right? So hot countries, for example, suffer the most when it gets hotter. Those countries have the biggest incentive to try and keep things cool. And so they may want to get started geoengineering before other countries feel like it's worth taking on those types of risks. And we don't really know. We've never tried to have these kinds of global bargains about what we're going to do. Right now, we're trying to create a global bargain to reduce climate change, and that's only been moderately successful. So This is opening up a whole new world of sort of political science thinking, you know, people trying to understand how should we design these treaties. If a country unilaterally decided to start geoengineering, well, it depends on what kind of activity it is. So if they're sucking CO2 out of the atmosphere, that actually could benefit everyone. But that's the most one of the most expensive strategies. If people started trying solar radiation management, you know, it might keep their country cooler, but it would affect other countries. It might make other countries too cold. You know, there's we don't have, you know, a plan for who gets to control the thermostat.
How far along are we toward having a plan?
We don't even have a plan for a plan.
Not at all. Right. Okay. No. That's terrifying.
Well, I think in the policy world, people, there's been a lot of scientific research on this, and people are only now in the policy space recognizing the market forces at play, realizing that we have to take this very seriously. It's no longer just like a fringe scientific, like science fiction idea. It's something that people are actually talking about trying.
Mm-hmm. I would also imagine that if these efforts, even some of them, are successful, would they then give countries or companies license to keep polluting, you know, if we have a mitigative technology that's that effective?
So that is a big fear. And I think people think about that a lot. You know, there's a history of people knowing that, you know, if I can, you know, sometimes people drive a little more dangerously because they know they have a seatbelt, right? So The concern is that people will behave more recklessly. They won't, you know, think about the future in the same way if they hope that technology can sort of rescue us. You know, it's a big fear, and I don't think it's without, you know, grounds. It's a real thing. It's also, on the other hand, not a great reason not to sort of try to understand what geoengineering can do for us, right? Like, just because you're afraid that people might drive more dangerously because they know they have an airbag doesn't mean you shouldn't invent an airbag. Like, you would, you know, you'd want to have that in case you got into an accident. So it's a tricky balance. How do we keep people motivated to, you know, reduce emissions at the same time trying to think about contingencies for these worst case scenarios?
Right. Well, and so it sounds like you're saying too that we at least have to explore geoengineering as a solution, right? I mean, it how much does it need to be in the mix?
It is absolutely something that we should be thinking about and doing active research on. I think the worst possible case scenario would be we arrive in the future, we still have climate change, people really want to do geoengineering, and we know nothing about it. You know, as scary as geoengineering sounds, the way I describe it to people is often it's a lot like chemotherapy, right? It sounds terrible in lots of ways, but not taking the treatment and suffering the disease might, in some cases, be much worse.
Solomon Chang directs the Global Policy Laboratory at UC Berkeley. And now for some related links. We have more reading on geoengineering and how the science and the controversy have developed over the years, including a story from 2015 written by our very own Marketplace tech producer, Matt Purdy. Now, like I said, everyone agrees that geoengineering is, as Solomon Chang puts it, sort of a chemotherapy-like solution to the climate problem. But more and more scientists are approaching it as a necessary evil. However, last March, when the UN proposed a resolution to try to gather more information about geoengineering, maybe like the plan for the plan that Solomon talked about, the United States, along with Saudi Arabia and Brazil, blocked the measure. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI?
I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.